Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
All right, well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, excited to be here with you today. Beautiful spring morning. It's tax season. Don't you just feel a little, you know, extra hop in your walk or jump in your whatever, you know? You're just feeling it. You're just excited. Well, maybe not, but welcome nonetheless. Now, this is an important show today. There is so much to talk about. It is April 2nd, my dear friends, and it is tax time in the heat of it, and we've got April 15th coming up. This is the busiest month of the year for tax awareness. At our office, it isn't particularly the busiest month per se, because October is very busy after everybody filed extensions. September, we got December planning months. But this is Tax Awareness Month. Very important. We talked about it. For all of you that are new listeners or just checking us out for the first time, welcome. My name is Mark Kohler, your host. I'm a CPA, attorney, author, family man, just living the dream, living here in Southern California, trying to hold it all together. Our home office back in Utah is where we started 12 years ago, and I have an incredible team of paralegals, accountants, CPAs, attorneys, partners. We've got a new office in Phoenix this last fall with my partner, Matt Sorensen, who will be joining us shortly. Just lots of good stuff. It's exciting. So want to welcome you all to the show. We work hard to make sure that we've got incredible content here every week for you. Today's show, we're going to be talking about raising capital for your business, how to raise money, what are the options, things to be aware of, pitfalls to avoid. I'm open to questions on this topic. Right now, I want to throw this out. For all of you that are already listening live, please feel free to send me an email with a question you might have about raising money, joint ventures, partnerships, private placements, crowdfunding, loans, SBA loans. We'll share everything and anything we know, point in the right direction to get more information. It's a huge topic, but that's what we're talking about today, is raising money for your business or your real estate deals. Just doesn't have to be a traditional brick-and-mortar business. Let's talk about just raising money, things to be aware of. So we're excited for that topic today. Now, before we dive into the topic at hand, and I will be, as I mentioned, having Matt Sorensen, our securities attorney, my partner out of our Phoenix office, joining me shortly, I'd like to talk about a few tax items and just kind of give you a little, you know, my little tip here for the week or two, and share some thoughts and feelings. The first thing I want to do is just on kind of a emotional, personal, motivating note. I often feel as a counselor, an attorney, a CPA, helping clients every day around the country, I do feel like I have a duty to help motivate and encourage my clients. And I want to share this all with you. I've had this feeling the last 2 to 3 days with several meetings I've had with clients. And this really comes from the heart. I want all of you to know out there, you're not alone. You're not alone in the pressure you feel to try to make ends meet, to try to take your business to that next level, to try to create revenue every month. I know how hard it is. And when you feel like driving down the road that, boy, everybody else must have it better than me, and no one has it as bad as I do, let me tell you, if you think other people are not going through trials or struggles that could even be worse than yours even, you're kidding yourself. It's tough out there. And that's what this life's about, learning some of these experiences and growing from them. And I want to just encourage all of you to not give up. Do not give up on the American dream. We live in the most amazing country in the world. I wouldn't say I'm a world traveler, but I've traveled a little bit, and I'm always grateful to come back to the United States and have the freedom to start a business, to try to make money, to know that I can rely on our legal system, for the most part, to keep things fair and the justice that's here for an entrepreneur. And I know it's tough. So I just wanted to say that. Just kind of an emotional note here, just to encourage all of you to not give up. I love small business. I love corporate America. I want all of my clients to have the steady income, if they can, of a day job or a business that they've built for years that creates that steady income. But as an entrepreneur, please know you don't have to make that leap and quit your job to start a small business. Just get something going on the side, and if you already have a small business, continue to develop other streams of income so that you don't feel the fear and the pressure each month of where is that next sale going to come from. So for what that's worth, I'm here with you. I'm an entrepreneur myself, small business owner, trying to make it happen, and it doesn't always have, you know, money's not falling from trees around the Kohler house. So don't come by with a bucket. There's no, you're not going to find any laying on the ground. we're all out there doing the same thing, trying to make it happen. Now, from a tax perspective here, as I said, this is Tax Awareness Month. I think I'm going to joke around with that on my next week's newsletter. I'm going to make a note right now, Tax Awareness Month. This is a big deal. There's a lot of little things that I want to just mention quickly that I think all of us as Americans need to be aware of when it comes to tax filing this month. So here's a few tax tips, if you'd call it that. Tips maybe not to save money, but tips to avoid a penalty or some interest and just make sure you're a little more organized. First of all, in today's newsletter, I want to make sure all of you are getting the newsletter. I just got an email from some clients this morning that said, Mark, I'm not getting your newsletter. I want it. How do I get it? So if you have friends or family or yourself that you're not getting that newsletter, send me an email, mark@markjkohler.com, mark@kkoslawyers.com, and just say, Mark, put me on the newsletter. You can get to it on all of our websites and sign up as well. But in the newsletter today, a couple notes. First was the Dirty Dozen. This is the Dirty Dozen announced by the IRS every year. They point out what the top 12 scams are to avoid. And I make a quick little comment or two and then give you the link directly to the IRS website where you can read those more fully. I think it's important you check them out. Not a lot of changes from last year's Dirty Dozen. There's not 12 new scams, but the IRS continues to get better at letting people know about these and enforcing them what they think are scams. So check that out. That's the IRS Dirty Dozen. Next, we've got the extension topic. Now, I've got an article that's going out on UPS.com tomorrow. Really excited about that. I think, well, it's the 3rd or 4th, so I guess it would be tomorrow or Thursday. And it's an article about filing an extension and how we should not be afraid of this. This is an important thing. If you saw in USA Today this morning, USA Today reported accurately that the IRS is behind. They're swamped because of the last-minute fiscal cliff deal. They're about 10 days behind on issuing refunds and processing returns from last year. So it's not uncommon for the American taxpayer to be a little behind as well. So I encourage you, don't stress out if you feel that you have to file by April 15th. Many entrepreneurs, I just got off a phone call this morning from another client that said, Mark, I never was ever filed extensions until I became an entrepreneur. And that's because there's a little more bookkeeping to be done. We seem to have a few more things coming at us. And so filing an extension is okay. Now, here's the deal. If you can go online, do it yourself, go through the IRS.gov website, file an extension. If you call our office, we'll put you in our system and take care of it immediately and get you in our system with a list of what we need when it's time to prepare your return and you're ready for us, get you that engagement letter. In fact, let me just give that little side note, Marisha Merritt at our office, many of you know she's the new client administrator. She's incredible. She'll answer all of your questions, tell you how we operate, get your extension going. So call the office if you need an extension. That's 435-865-5866. 435-865-5866. 5866. And of course, that's some of that info is in the newsletter today. But get your extension filed. Now here, the extension is not an extension to pay. So let me just clarify this for all of you out there. If you think you're going to owe, you have two options. Now this is important. One, you can make a deposit and kind of guesstimate what you think you're going to owe. Now we're going to rub two sticks together. We're going to try to figure out how to whittle that down and figure out how we can sharpen the pencil enough that you don't end up owing that much and you end up getting a refund later in the year. But at least make an estimated payment of what you think you might owe. And then therefore, you have no penalties and interest. However, some of you may say, well, Mark, I don't want to send the IRS a check. I just want to file a freaking extension. Go for it. Folks, I'll be honest with you. Many times in my life, very recently in the last few years, I'll file an extension, and I don't know if I owe or not. And if I end up owing, the penalty for not paying in April is very, very low. The interest is very low, cheaper than a credit card. The real problem is if you don't pay by October 15th. That's when things get crazy. And if you don't file an extension or if you don't file a return and owe, it gets crazy. But here's the deal. This is the first go at it. It's April 15th. File an extension. If you can't make a payment or you don't know if you owe or not and you don't want to make a payment, don't do it. That's fine. At least file an extension. Because if you don't, things start to snowball and the penalties and interest can start to rack up. So file your extension. Next point. Some of you say, Mark, I've already made, I've got plenty of payments in there. I've been making payments last year. I'm not going to owe. I'm going to file my extension, get my books together. Later this week, I have an article going out at entrepreneur.com. I'll send out a link to all of you as well. That this article asks, I present five questions you should ask yourself before filing your return to help you dig up more write-offs. I'm excited for many of you to read that. I covered most of those items in last week's radio show, so I'm not holding anything back from you. My listeners, I love you. But the written article might help spur some more thoughts. But here's the point. If you don't owe and you're just going to file an extension to buy some time to file, you still need to be making deposits this year for what you're going to pay this year. For example, let me give you this one. I had a new client I met with yesterday, came to my office. He said, Mark, I've been killing it. The last 3 months, I've made somewhere around $50,000 in the last 3 months with my business. I said, that's great. I said, have you made any deposits with the IRS? No. Okay. Now, that was $50,000 net. He'd probably grossed close to $90,000. 80 to 90,000, and the net was around 50 grand. He and his wife have two or three small businesses. I said, have you made any deposits? He said, no. I said, this is not good because this is going to snowball and hit you later like a ton of bricks. So I told him, and I want to mention this to all of you, if you're a small business owner, take at least 10 to 20%. I'd say 20% to be safe. 10% at least. Take 20% of your net and send it into the IRS as an estimated deposit. Now, for those of you that have an S-Corp out there, this can be included in your payroll procedure. Cynthia is going to be doing that this month. It's payroll month. I'm going to bring that up in another second. But this is for tax awareness, folks. File an extension, send in a deposit if you want. If you're caught up on your payments, make sure you're making deposits this month for first quarter of your profits this year. So don't forget to make deposits, and I encourage all of you to create a little bank account and set aside 10 to 20% as an entrepreneur. That's always a safe bet. Put a little that money aside. Tax Awareness Week, folks. I know some of you want to careen off the road and drive into a semi. Don't do it. Let me hit a couple more points, and we'll be done, and we'll move on to our making money topic, or raising money. It's payroll month, too. Is if you didn't need to make estimated deposits, if you didn't need to worry about your tax return for last year, it's also payroll month. So if you have an S corporation, folks, it is time to make sure that you get your payroll report filed. It's due by the end of this month. Now, this is a retroactive look. For many of you that have S corps, what we do is we call you up, Cynthia in my office, Cynthia Morales. Again, I gave the phone number earlier. You know how to get a hold of us if you're listening to the show. Talk to Cynthia and say, hey, Cynthia, I have an S corporation. I need to do a little payroll report for first quarter. She's going to go, how much do you think you made? And you're going to go, I didn't make anything really. Then she'll say, let's file a zero. Or if you've never filed before, let's not start filing. But if you filed before, you did make some money, then she needs to send in a report. Because the IRS is like a boyfriend or a girlfriend. If you don't stay in touch with them, if you don't let them know what's going on, they tend to freak out. And they're going to start texting you and bugging you. And well, they won't text you. But they're going to bug you. And they're going to want to know what the hell's going on in your life. Do we need a report or not? Do you owe us taxes? And the IRS, like any good boyfriend or girlfriend, wants to stay informed. So with payroll, it's the same process. For any of you that have an S-Corp, the S-Corp is a wonderful way to save on taxes this year. It's going to reduce your taxes for Obamacare potential taxation, self-employment tax, which with the payroll tax holidays over. So very, very important that you make sure you take care of your S-Corp, because if you don't, it can, again, hit you like a ton of bricks later, and you're not going to get the savings you planned on. Well, folks, I don't want to go in any further and bore the heck out of you. Tax Awareness Month. Be aware of your filing deadlines. Be aware of deposits. Be aware of your extension. Be aware of payroll. Let's start the year off right. I can't believe it's April. Isn't this crazy? Many of you are probably like, Mark, I can't believe it's April. I know, it's just flown by. So make sure that you're on these topics, and we'll go from there. Now, before I bring out our illustrious Matt Sorensen, I had another follow-up from one of our open this is a question right here for our show. I'm going to wait for that. So, Jill, love your email question here already. I'm getting questions from clients that are and listeners right now. And so this one is right on topic for the show coming up, the show topic at hand. So we'll do that in just a moment. Looking to see if there's any other emails. Let me go over to the chat line for those that are listening live from your computer. There are no chat comments either. So, folks, what this means is it's time to introduce the man of the hour, who's going to help me through the rest of this show talk about raise money for your business. Folks, I got Matt Sorensen on the line, attorney, securities attorney, partnership guru, self-directed IRA expert, speaker, working on a new book, and you ought to see him in his CrossFit outfit. It's impressive. If you've seen Matt Sorensen in a leotard, you know what I'm talking about. He's a specimen. So, Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. And you know, that introduction was going so great, and then it's just the same. And it's not a leotard, it's a singlet.
Now, you might need to get a little more closer to your phone. You sound a little quiet, but also you said it's not a leotard, it's a what?
And sorry, I switched over. I finished up the speaking thing, so I'm in my car, but switched over to my phone. Hopefully it sounds better.
Yeah, it sounds much better. So tell us what you work out in. All the ladies wanted to know.
It's a singlet. No, I'm joking. They are shorts and tennis shoes, not for playing tennis. And that's it. No shirt. You don't, you know.
Well, now that you're in Arizona, you're getting a tan already. It's getting your summer, getting your swimsuit body shape, right?
That's right. Tan already. It's tan all year.
It's true. Get tan all year. Well, this is spring break. It's getting crazy down there. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us. Now, I know you just stepped out of a speaking engagement this morning. I bugged you and said you've got to be on the show today. So I'm glad that we've got you in a parking lot with your full attention on your phone now. Thank you so much for being with us. Matt, did you you want to tell us about your little article? You had an article in the newsletter today. Well, tell us what you wanted folks to know about that.
Sure, I'll publicize my own article. No sense in not self-promoting. The article is about self-directed IRA investments. It's kind of a basics of what you can invest in with a self-directed IRA or self-directed retirement plan, and I also go over the prohibited transaction basics. It's a great article maybe to share with others, people you may not know that don't know about self-directed IRAs. I know many of our clients are familiar with the basics. But it's a good refresher, and it's also, I try to make it a great resource to maybe share with others. And go like it on Facebook or LinkedIn, and so people can, your friends and others can find out about how that works and maybe invest with you or partner with you or maybe use them as a source to raise capital, which we'll be talking about here later today.
Yeah, and I think it's a great introductory article. It needed to be done. It's in Matt's catalog of blog articles. If you haven't been to MatthewNSorensen.com. Go check that out.
MattNSorensen.com.
Oh, just Matt N. That's right. You went with the sorry, I should know better. I've got it programmed here on my Google bookmarks, so I don't type it out. It's kind of like phone numbers. I don't know anybody's phone numbers anymore. I just bookmark them. But no, Matt, M-A-T-N, is in Nancy Sorensen. Get out there and check it out. He's got plenty of blog articles.
From the law firm.
That's right. Links from the law firm website, which Matt, we ought to talk about here. Sorry, before we go there, let me just say, folks, I know many of you listening to the show are IRA, self-directed IRA experts. It's a huge topic that we teach through many of our shows and articles and workshops. So, but for those of you that may be new, this is a great article to kind of go get the basics out of the way and read up on that. So great article, Matt. I just want to say that as well.
Thanks.
So anyway, the KKOS website, it's gotten a facelift the last 2 or 3 weeks. We want to let all of you know, you'll probably get an email later this week letting you know that the website has been cleaned up. We had a server crash with GoDaddy a month ago. We had some malware on the website. It was a nightmare. I know many of you as clients have sent us some emails saying, hey, what's going on with your website? We want to let you know that we've switched to a new host service. We have a new, screening system for viruses and malware, and we did a facelift at the same time. So folks, get out and check it out. And we launched this week, you saw it in the newsletter as well, our new paralegal entity service. Matt, tell everybody about this. I mean, this is our new flagship service that can really save some folks some money.
Yeah, this is something we know a lot of clients, want to start an LLC or start an S corp and just get going now on it. They don't want to call and wait for an appointment with an attorney, or they don't need an attorney. They know what they want, and they just want to get documents going and want to get that process started with our office. So we now have the capability. It's online. Go to our website. You fill out the information for your company, submit it, pay online. It's a discounted fee. We're cheaper than LegalZoom. We price matched all our stuff to be cheaper than LegalZoom. And, you're kind of getting, we like to say, law firm service that LegalZoom prices. It's actually better than LegalZoom prices, but I don't want to harp too much on that point. But go there. We really tried to provide this as a service for clients who don't need to talk to an attorney. Obviously, those clients who want to have the attorney consult, want that to be a part of it. That's primary focus of what many lawyers in our office do. So, always can receive that service. That's not going away. But we want to provide this as an option for clients so they could pick what best fits them and choose the fee and service that fits what they really need.
Great summary point. And many of you have for years have said we need a discounted service that competes with these online companies that's affordable. And we've done it. It's done. So, folks, you can go to our website and click on it right on the homepage. And it's very, very affordable. And you get a paralegal helping you all the way along. It's the incredible service, so you're going to love it. Okay, well, let's move to our topic at hand. We're already getting some comments and some emails on this, and so we're going to jump into it. Now, on the newsletter this morning that many of you have already had a chance to look at, I highlighted 15 different ways to raise money. And these are, I wouldn't say I have the corner on the market. You could probably break that into 20 or 25 or break it, consolidate it down into 3 or 4. In fact, in my introduction to the radio show, we've kind of point out 3 major ways to raise money is either to borrow, to joint venture or partner, or to use investors. And those are 3 very different methods: borrowing, partnering, or using investors. And we're going to highlight that today in a very important way. Last year, we did the show, how to borrow, how to use money of others and not go to jail. And this is going to be a kind of an updated version of that, making sure that you're not getting into trouble if you're going to take money from others, how to do it. So let's maybe go through those 3 items quickly, and let's explain that for everybody here to kind of get a baseline of knowledge. And then we've already got some questions here on the chat line and via email that we'll jump to here in a moment. So let me summarize this again, and then Matt, I'm going to throw it to you to explain one of these, and we'll go back and forth. Matt and I have often said, people blur these lines, and they want to kind of have a little of everything, and that's when they get into trouble. And so I think it's very important that we put folks into three different columns when you're using someone else's money. And that could be an institution or a person or something like that. But let's keep it clear. The first option is borrowing. Again, the second one is partnering, and the third is investors. So let's talk about borrowing for a minute, what that would generally look like and how it's different than partnering or investing, and how those lines can get blurred. Matt, you want to field that for us? Tell us what you, when you think of borrowing, what would be the terms and what would be some of the characteristics of a borrowing relationship?
All right. Now, let me kind of preface this too. And I love your comment. I think it's, why this matters. I think a lot of clients are like, well, why don't I just do it this way? Why don't I just do it that way? It's like, well, okay. There's a whole bunch of laws out there that protect people and how they invest their money. And you don't want to be on the opposite side of those laws and be in violation of them. So as we go through these here, just think, I got to fit the way I'm raising money from others into one of these categories. If I'm not in one of these categories, or like Mark said, if I'm blurring the lines between categories, I'm going to have legal issues. So be very careful about making sure you fit in one of these categories. Now, the first one, the borrowing or lending, is the easiest one. If you want to raise money in the easiest possible way, I think it's to have people lend money. Now, in order to stay in compliance with securities laws, when you're lending money, it's got to be a real loan. Don't get cute about it and make it so that, you know, you're getting share profits and you call it a promissory note. That's not a loan. So it's going to be a loan, typically in the form of a promissory note or loan agreement. There's going to be a principal amount of money invested and then interest coming back to the lender who's invested the money with you, or I should say who's loaned the money to you. Now, there's a couple of important points when you loan money in this way or you're receiving money from others. The first thing is it needs to be secured by real estate, and this is the first exception here that you want to try and fit into. There's other options, but I'm just going to the first. It needs to be secured by real estate in a first lien position.
Okay, I like it. And let me add a little bit to what Matt said. Love everything you just said, Matt. I think that Matt made a great point when he said, when you have a note where someone gets to play in the profits, that's not a note. I want to reiterate that point. I have so many clients that I talk to literally on a weekly basis. I know I will talk about this on a weekly basis. I already did yesterday, where clients go, oh, yeah, so-and-so is going to loan me money, and they get 8% and then a piece of the back end. Folks, that's a partner. That is not a loan. If someone's going to share in the profit, then they're going to get sucked into a lawsuit, and they're going to claim that they were a partner if you rip them off. And this is where it can hurt you. It may be easier to attract someone, but it can bite you in the butt later. So I like that Matt's talking about having security, having a note, paying interest, and not blurring the line between profit and interest. And maybe you don't give someone a lien against real estate. That's fine. The list here that I just put in the newsletter today was you can borrow from friends or family. You can borrow from a bank. You may have seller financing in a real estate deal. You might use credit cards or credit lines. We've talked about corporate credit before on the show. You might use hard money. You might go through a traditional SBA loan. Every week, Matt and I talk with clients on almost every one of these topics of how to borrow money from someone or an institution in a creative way. But in all of these instances, it's interest and terms. It's not a share of the back end. Matt, your thoughts?
Okay, yeah. Now, keep in mind, this is just one of a couple of options here, one of a few. So, but it's an easy one. I think for a lot of clients raising money for real estate deals, they're using other people's money, they're raising capital, use a promissory note, get them secured on a deed of trust in first position, and that's a pretty easy, relatively straightforward way to pull it off. Not too many documents need to be done. There's obviously going to be a note. There's going to be a deed of trust recorded. But that's it. Now, there's other options, too. Let's say you've got two people who want to loan you money on a real estate deal. Okay, it could be one promissory note or two promissory notes to each of them, and then I can secure them on one deed of trust. They get a percent of ownership in the deed of trust. So there's multiple people on the deed of trust, and that's okay too. They're still secured in first position, and that's a potential way to, you know, maybe take a loan from a couple people on a real estate deal.
Okay. Now, we had a question that just came up here, Matt, on the chat line. This is from Merrill, related to this issue. JoLynn, we'll come to yours here in a moment. Merrill asks, Matt, Mark, if I have you guys write up a promissory note, deed of trust, can your firm originate it to avoid usury issues? So, Matt, why don't you tell us what usury is and this interest rate choice?
Sure. So, usury is a principle in most states that will, you know, that applies to it, sets a maximum rate of interest that can be charged. So, some states still have this in place on their books. A lot of states that do have it have pretty much an exception that excludes it, and really usury doesn't apply to anyone. So it's a state-by-state thing, but it can set a ceiling on how much interest rate you can charge. For a lot of investment transactions, though, in most states, the usury rates are not going to apply, and they're not restrictive, but that's hard to answer for all 50 states, California being kind of a niche state.
Okay. So, and I guess, Merrill, to add to Matt's comment is, usury laws could apply, and we, as your law firm, we would make sure that any note you drafted, if it starts bumping up against that, we're going to make sure that your note complies and you don't have any usury problems. Folks, another way of thinking of usury is, if you're charging so much interest that you're going to send out Rocco and Milo to break someone's legs when they don't pay, you're probably violating a usury law. So
yeah.
high interest rates mean you may be borrowing from the family, if you know what I mean by quote unquote the family. Anyway, by the way, Matt, I wanted to, this is a, you know, one of these days we've got to talk about the story of me hiring two private investigators to trail someone, and their names were Milo and Rocco. I'm not kidding. Those were their real names, Milo and Rocco. I'm just throwing that out.
I think I've heard some Milo stories in the past, but but I was going to say, too, on this usury point is if you're 10% or below on an interest rate, you're typically not going to be in a usury issue. If you're above 10%, you know, in most instances, I think usury is still not going to apply, but you still, that's where you might be in a situation in a particular state where you might want to just confirm whether your interest rate is violating usury laws.
I should say rule of thumb. I like it. Okay, now let's move to the second topic quickly, and this is partnering. So again, in the newsletter, I just kind of highlight this as maybe a joint venture agreement, or you actually form an entity. Now, folks, here's the deal. If you're just going to borrow money from someone, great, or an institution, you're going to pay interest, and that's it. They don't get a share of the back end. Once you start giving someone a share of the back end, that's what is called a partnership. Now, you could document it with an LLC, a corporation, or what's called a JV agreement. Now, we can help you draft a JV agreement very affordably, probably cheaper than setting up an entity, depending on if you want to fight about it and talk about it for 10 hours. But a JV agreement can be very affordable, and it's kind of like just a basic partnership agreement. If Matt Sorensen and I are going to do a deal together, we might sign a little JV agreement. His S-Corp partners with my S-Corp. We go out and do a deal. Now, that's different than a loan. He's going to put money into a deal, and I'm going to 1099 him his share of the profit later. We understand that there's duties and responsibilities. We might even form an LLC. But, folks, that's a partnership. Now, where we blur lines with securities law is when you say, oh, Mark, I'm going to go out and start raising money from a bunch of people and put them in an LLC, and I want all these silent investors. Well, hold it. If they're silent investors, then they're really not partners. And so this line between partnering, because you're not going to give them interest rate, you're going to give them a share of the action, this is when partnering can sometimes blur the line of investors. Matt, how would you define those two and the difference there?
Yeah, I think and I have a blog article on this very topic that goes over when does my LLC or joint venture agreement violate securities laws. So, you know, if you want the nitty gritty and some cases and stuff, you know, for the nerds out there, go to my blog. I've got a good article on. But this is the very key point from the securities laws. If you're in this joint venture and partnership structure, it must be a true partnership. So there needs to be voting rights and a way essentially for an investor to protect themselves and be involved in the investment with you as a partner, which is very different than being solely an investor. Now, you can have a deal structured where someone's kind of a cash partner, so to speak, and puts in the cash, and another person is the kind of service partner or work partner, for lack of a better word, and that service or work partner can be the one raising the money and can be the one who does the day-to-day work. But your agreement needs to document that major decisions are going to be made by the partners together, and there's going to be voting rights and protections for the cash investor, because that's what distinguishes it, a partnership, from just a sole, you know, securities issue. Is the securities laws are not designed to prevent people from partnering in investments or businesses or real estate deals. They're designed to prevent and provide legal protections to people solely investing. So treat them like a partner. Get some terms in the agreement that outline how that partner's protected. And really, that document and those partnership terms protect you raising the money from a securities law standpoint as much as they protect the other person investing the funds.
Okay, love it. Now, let me add a couple more to this, because I love, Matt, tag-teaming you with this here, because some people listen to the show and they think, I can't understand Mark Kohler, and then the way Matt said it, it makes perfect sense. So I'm hoping Matt and I are saying these things in different ways and adding to one another's comments that help you. Folks, if you've just joined us, we're talking about raising money for your business, things to avoid, pitfalls to avoid, and ways to make, you know, to go out and get this money. Now, we're gonna continue to play with this. Now, what we've done thus far is we've talked about three distinctions: if I'm going to borrow money, if I'm going to partner with someone, and then if I'm going to look for investors. The one thing I want to add here on this investor comment that Matt just brought up is, folks, back in the 1920s, when the stock market fell for the first major time and we had the Great Depression, what happened is a huge part of that crash on Wall Street was that companies and promoters were making promises to all sorts of people, and there was no oversight as to what these promises really entailed. So people were inflating these values of companies and projects, and people were dumping money into it, and then the stock market fell. Stock market crashed. And so what evolved from that in 1933 and 34 was the SEC. If many of you didn't know this, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, evolved in the 1933 and 1934 Act to protect investors. So when Matt and I talk about all this security stuff, it all came about because of the Great Depression and the crash, because we need to – this is what the government feels like, is that we need to have this structure to protect people and provide guidelines if you want to put your money in a deal and not be a partner. This is for people that don't want to be a partner and they don't want to help make decisions. They just want to put their money in and sit back and get a piece of the action. That's when the SEC comes in. And so what I would recommend to all of you, and we're going to start fielding some questions now, but if all of you are out there wanting to, any of you out there want to raise a lot of money and say, hey, I want to start advertising on my website, or I want to go to workshops and I want to talk to people and I want to raise $1 million or $500,000 or even $100,000, if you want these investors to give you money so you can go out and change the world and make a better place, Matt can consult with you on what your rules and guidelines are on how you can contact them, what promises you can make and what promises you can't make. And those securities rules oftentimes take the form of a private placement memorandum or securities law filing. And then the SEC is happy, the investor's happy, and you're happy, and you make money. That's the goal. And that's when it's an investor, not a partner. Ooh, that was a mouthful. Matt, do you want to add to that before I go to our first question here?
No, I think that was a good summary, good way to just kind of get the big picture of why this matters. And, you know, I think this last topic, this last place to fit into, just keep in mind, we're going from complexity here. So you want to do it an easy way, stick with the lender model. The next easiest way, go to a partnership model. And then we're, you know, each one provides a certain level of flexibility and complications, though, in terms of how you're going to have to document it from a legal standpoint. But so just know, everybody's, you know, you got to find the where you're going to fit in as you're raising money here. You know, there's cost and complexity that comes with more flexibility that you get in taking other people's money for investments here. I just wanted to preface that before you get this last one, because it can be kind of expensive to get to this next structure.
I love it. I'm standing up. I'm so excited about this. Many of you don't know, I got a stand-up desk. I need to take a picture of this and put it on the newsletter. So I'm kind of at my stand-up desk, and I'm getting the little Stairmaster thing. So while I'm on my radio show, I can be doing the Stairmaster at my stand-up desk. It's better for your back, burning calories. There I go. I'm just throwing that out. Okay, here's our first question from Jolynn. She says, "Hey, Mark and Matt, I am sure you will cover the SEC regulations for raising money." We just kind of started hitting that. She says, "Is there a three-touch rule for making contact with investors or others when raising money? If so, what are they?" Thank you. You guys are both awesome. Appreciate that, Jolynn. Matt, three-touch rule. Have you heard of that?
Never heard of it.
Okay. I have not heard of that either, Jolynn, a three-touch rule. I will say this, and maybe Matt can speak to this too, even a little more intelligently than I, is that is when you're going out to touch or reach out to other people that may want to invest with you, how you advertise is very critical. And that may be kind of what you're referring to is those touches, what those options are. We have what's coming down the pipe, crowdfunding, which allows you to advertise a little bit more. There's some ways to do some advertising now under the new SEC rules. Matt, why don't you talk about that? How can I go out? Now, this is important. Okay, so as we talk about how to raise money now, we've kind of built the framework. What are some new rules on how I can go out and advertise and try to attract people to invest with me?
Okay, so the Jobs Act, which was signed into law by President Obama last year, about this time actually, really provided a couple of new ways that allow people raising money for business or real estate investments, you know, whatever it is, but allows people to raise money from others and to have more freedom in how they advertise. Traditionally, as you're raising money from others, there's kind of a rule that's like you can't go out and just publicly solicit people or go throw up a website or go mass blast email people you don't know. The typical way of raising money in the first couple of ones we've gone through here of notes or partnerships is you got to be working with people you already have an existing relationship with or know or, have a contact with. You can't just be out mass publicizing to the world that you're trying to raise money. But the new laws, which are the crowdfunding law, we'll kind of summarize here, which I think is going to be huge for small business and for small real estate investment projects, are going to give some marketing and public solicitation opportunities where you can get out and market that business idea or that investment idea to the world. Also, we're going to talk for a moment here about what used to be called PPMs or private placement memorandums. And there's going to be a new rule change on that that's going to give people flexibility in advertising those, where traditionally they had to be private, and at the private placement memorandum, they had to kind of be private in that you were raising money from people you had an existing relationship with. Now there's going to be a new rule option in place that will allow you to solicit, throw it up on a website, go speak at a seminar and solicit people to invest. There's going to be ways you can do that in raising money under some of these new rules. Now, I've been excited for this once this law passed. This was huge. We were so excited last year when this law passed. And Congress, when they passed the law, gave the SEC until January of 2013 to implement the changes. Now it's April 2013. SEC has not implemented either of these changes on crowdfunding or on this new private placement offering model or also called a Regulation D offering model where you can solicit. So I'm still filing your tax return by April 15th or file an extension. SEC, they're going to get to this when they get to it, I guess. So it's still in process. A little bit just playing. It's taking so long. But it's going to be awesome once it comes into play. It's going to provide people a lot of freedom and opportunity now to really get out there and try and test their ideas for businesses or investments and try and seek out raising money with these new methods.
Well, okay. Now, I think we have a live caller here, but now I've lost him, so we may bring him back on here. Live callers always get priority. So let me point this out to everybody. Now, as you're trying to go out and raise money, I just want to add to what Matt said. We're going to be getting you, as soon as the SEC comes out with these new rules, trust me, you're going to get an email from our firm immediately with an update as to what those options are so you can better and more quickly raise money. But let me give you a suggestion right here. For all of you out there that are trying to raise money for your business, I think you can go out and talk to your neighbors, your friends, your family. Go to workshops and talk to people. Put it on your website. But here's what you can put. Say, hey, I'm looking for someone that'd like to loan me some money to get my business to the next level. I'm willing to pay 8, 10, 12%. I'm going to give security in the business. I'm going to give you a lien against my house or my car or my kids, whatever. You can go out and solicit all you want and tell people, hey, if you want to loan me money, here's my terms. I'd love to borrow money from you. And Jolynn, you asked the question out here, do you need a broker to do that? No. And you can give points and interest. You can charge points and interest if you want to loan money to someone. That's fine. You don't need a broker because it's your loan and or your money giving the loan. So either way, you're fine. Also, folks, you can go out in workshops and talk to people and say, hey, I'd love to partner with you. Does anybody want to partner with me? I got a great idea. I got a great real estate deal. I've got a great little bed and breakfast idea. I've got a great little restaurant idea. Whatever it is, you can go out all day long and send out emails, go to workshops and tell people, hey, I'd like to partner with someone. I want to be together with someone and get married in this business. Who wants to join me? That's fine. But where Matt is talking about here from just saying it a different way is you can't go out and say, hey, do you want to give me your money? I'm going to put it in a pool here and go out and create some sort of return on investment for you. You're a silent partner, by the way, and you can't tell me what to do, but just give me your money. Okay, that's where the securities laws get bad, and that's where solicitation and advertising gets to be a problem. So those new rules that are going to make it easier aren't out yet. We know what they kind of look like, but we don't know the specifics. Matt, is that a good summary? You're okay with what I just said?
Yeah, you just got to... In any model we're talking about here, lender model, partner model, investor model, you still have restrictions on public solicitation rules. So you can always fit into some of these exceptions like we talked about earlier. Okay, this person's a lender, so I'm not violating the securities law. I'm fitting them into that lender model. But this person's a partner, so you know I'm okay from the securities law standpoint. I'm not violating securities laws and taking their money. But you still need to be working with people you know or have some type of existing relationship with. Public mass solicitations with people you have no existing relationship with can violate the rules. So you still have to kind of work within a framework of people you have some existing relationship with.
I like it. Now, folks, too, as we look at kind of these 15 ways to raise money that was in my newsletter today, if you're borrowing from friends or family or joint venturing with others or creating an entity with others, we know what we're dealing with. We've been talking about that. But on the topic of corporate credit, I had a whole show on that about a month ago. Please go into the history on iTunes or on Blog Talk Radio. Look at the corporate credit topic. I think we need to talk more about hard money. We haven't had a show specifically on hard money. Next week, I'm going to have Bruce Norris of the Norris Group on the radio show next week, and we are excited to have him because he knows a lot about hard money. Now, I don't know if we're going to exclusively talk about hard money next week for the show, but please mark your calendars. We're excited to have Bruce come on next week. This is the first time he's come on the show, and it's going to be an honor. So SBA loans, your typical standard walk into a bank scenario, those things are pretty straightforward. But today we're really trying to focus on keeping you out of hot water when you're making partnerships and agreements with people. Use notes, use LLCs, use JVs. The key document not to use is a napkin at Denny's. Can I just say that? please stay away from your legal documents consisting of a napkin at Denny's. That's not a good thing. All right, we have a question here from Jill, and Matt, this is a good one. And Jill, I'm just going to say this. You're right. I think you need a consultation because your questions do get pretty elaborate here. But let's get kind of this out on a table and maybe talk about some of the options. She says, hey, Mark, guys, I have a family member, a stepdad, who wants to invest or partner with me in my real estate business. Now, I like it. Jill's already pointing out, she put invest/partner. I have an S-Corp set up, and it's just me, no other members. He would like to invest $25,000. He wants his profits to be reinvested after each project. He does not want to show any profit from the investment. He wants to be issued a K-1, not a 1099. Well, some of the things you're talking about, Jill, contradict each other. But before I comment, Matt, what's your initial reaction? So the daughter-in-law says, hey, stepdad, you want to put some money in some deals? He wants to invest $25,000. He wants his profits reinvested, but he doesn't want to show profit, but he wants a K-1. Can you have your cake and eat it too? I think there's some issues here. What are your initial reactions?
Yeah, that kind of sounds weird just from a partnership structure and how would we document that and how do they get what they want. I don't know that that would work very well. Let me just try and approach it from a security standpoint, raising money standpoint. If you're in these little family scenarios or close friend scenarios, starting a business, someone wants to put money in, great. Let them invest some money. We're talking a couple people here. It's a family member or close friend. The securities laws aren't going to come in and really try and be protective of that person unless there's some fraud or something taking place. And a lot of the securities laws, and this is kind of getting into some fine points here that I really don't want people to take and try and apply outside of this very specific example. But most states, if it's an in-state person investing money with another person in the same state, there was no solicitation of the investment in terms of, you know, this person's not trying to raise money from all these people. But it's like, hey, I just have a family member who wants to invest some money in my company and get it started. Most states have what's called an isolated transaction exemption that's going to say, hey, if one or two people invested in your small company, and you know, great, we're not going to treat that as a security for securities investment purposes. So there are some little kind of, you know, you might get away with one or two people in your business or investing and use this isolated transaction exemption. But that should not be used or relied on if you're raising money from multiple people or particularly from people that your relationship with them really is just from a business or investment standpoint. These are close personal friends or family that you could use to rely on that isolated transaction exemption.
Yeah, and I would say, Jill, this is for all the listeners out there. Let's say a family member or a friend or a neighbor or an associate comes to you and says, hey, I want to give you $25,000. I want to partner with you on a real estate deal or project. Jill, your first option and best bet is to say, great, let's sign a joint venture agreement. I'm going to do the deal through my own S-Corp, and when the deal's over, I'll give you a 1099 for your share of the profit. That's the easiest way to go. Now, one would call that a general partnership, frankly. If I was representing the money person, I would want them to use an entity in that document because I don't want them personally liable for any sort of general partnership scenario, real estate deal gone bad. But a JV agreement would be a great way to document it. And frankly, Jill, that money person, they're not going to get a K-1. They're going to get a 1099 because it's just a JV agreement. Now, if they want a K-1 and they want the money reinvested and it's part of a long-term scenario, I like what Matt said, you form an LLC. You form an LLC, you document their ownership, you create a bank account, you drop the money in there, they're going to get a K-1, there's going to be a tax return, and you can reinvest the profits from time to time. The weird part of your bullet point here is that he doesn't want to show any profit. Well, guess what? If you're in a partnership in an LLC and you're getting a K-1, guess what? There's going to be some profit, even if it is reinvested. So he needs to kind of have a reality check on what this is going to go into. So think about that. But this is a great example where Jill even says at the end of her email, she says, it sounds like I might need a consultation. I'm excited to talk about how to value this with my stepdad. For any of you listening, this is what we're good at. Whether no matter where you're at in the country, I've got listeners here from Atlanta just commenting on the show today. Thank you so much, Terrell. But folks, wherever you're at, we can help you draft the right LLC or the right partnership agreement or JV, no matter where you're at, and help you document it so you're not going to get screwed if you're the money person, or how you're not going to go to jail if you're the one taking the money. So very, very important. Matt, you agree with some of my comments, or am I out there in right field? What are your thoughts?
I love it. Great summary of how to structure that based on the scenario. I took the same pathway, great structure. Nothing to add, but just high five.
All right, sweet. High five. Okay, got another question here via email. Matt, how much does it cost to do a private placement memorandum? If I want to raise $500,000 and do an investment pool of sorts, how much are the legal fees going to cost me?
Well, our fees have gone on private offerings from $15,000 to $25,000 over the years. We're being a little more competitive on pricing on those, but for someone who's experienced in it or for a smaller offering, the fees would be less. So give me a call. I'd have to, you know, get a little bit bigger idea of what we're committing to in terms of fees on that. But typical private placement offering in our office is $15,000. A small offering of $500,000 or something under $1 million, we might have some cheaper fees and ways. I just need to know what's involved and if it's a type of offering or structure that we've done before. So it's hard for me to quote that. Sorry.
Well, all right. Well, I think that's important to have that basic breakdown out there, but I don't want anyone to be also shocked. When you're raising $1 million or $500,000, you're going to spend a little bit in legal fees to make sure it's done right. This is exactly what the Bernie Madoff, case really is about, is taking money from investors and making promises. We just want to keep you out of that harm's way that could happen to you. So that's going that investor route. But again, folks, 95% of our clients just use the LLC model, a joint venture model, or a promissory note model, and I think it's very doable. And I want to encourage all of you out there, don't give up. Matt, I want you to prepare for a final statement here. We've got about 3 minutes left. So let me say this as well to all of our listeners today and those listening on the podcast. Don't give up on trying to raise money. I know it's tough, and you've got your idea, and you love it, and you're excited about it, and you want others to be excited about it. Write a good business plan. Write a good summary of why you need the money and how you're going to use it. Look at all the best case, worst case scenarios. Have a little proposal. It shocks me sometimes how many people want money and they have maybe even a 3-minute elevator speech that's wonderful, but then they don't have anything in writing to show people what they want to, how they want to use the money and what their promises really are. Get that put together. In my book, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You, I talk about a strategic plan and a business plan. I have some exhibits in the back of the book that help you draft those. Go through them. They'll help you out immensely. Get your crap together. Help me help you. Help me help you. That's a Jerry Maguire quote. There we go. Matt, what do you think? I mean, what would you tell someone out there trying to raise money? What do they got to do?
Well, if you want them to show you the money, they got to, you got to do it the right way here. So trying to stay on your movie quote theme. Okay. I just want to summarize and just think. Keep in mind, am I going to treat this person who wants to give me money as a lender, secured lender? Am I going to treat them as a partner where they got some voting rights? Or am I going to treat them as an investor where I'm basically taking their money, they don't have voting rights, and they're going to just get returns on whatever I can make on it? Each one has its pros and cons. We've tried to break them down and summarize them. They're very complex, but they're not impossible to pull off. So you just need to get educated on it, get the right documents in place, protect you, protect the investor, and hopefully go out and make some money.
Great summary. Matt, you're the man. even though you do wear a unitard when you work out, that's okay. You know, you look great.
I don't know where this is coming from, but
I don't know where it's coming from either. I'm just saying. Hey,
I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea here. Okay,
Hey, you're awesome, Matt Sorensen out of the Phoenix office of KQS Lawyers. Thanks for being with us today, folks. Another powerful show on helping you better live the American dream. Raise money, get out there, take your dream to the next level. We'll be here for you. And we'll be here next Tuesday at 11 a.m. on the Mark Kohler Show, talking with Bruce Norris on other ways to do deals and make money. So be here with us.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.